Support for Tested comes from Duke Health, reminding listeners that COVID-19 vaccines are safe, effective, and can protect individuals and others from the virus. Together, communities can end this pandemic. Find sites for a free vaccine at DukeHealth.org.
This is Tested, a look at how we're responding to today's challenges in North Carolina and across the South. I'm Celeste Gracia. Anyone who's been to the Outer Banks knows that it's pretty windy out there. Like, really windy. That wind might be kind of rough for beachgoers or kayakers, but it's great for kite surfers and for producing electricity through offshore wind farms.
How do we make sure that we get this economic development? It is going to take a dedicated effort from the state. North Carolina is a little bit behind, but it's not too late to catch up.
That's Catherine Collins. She's the president of the Southeastern Wind Coalition, a nonprofit that advocates for renewable wind energy. Collins and a lot of other people, including environmental groups, state officials, and private businesses, all agree that North Carolina could be a major player in the offshore wind industry. A state report released last year says North Carolina manufacturers could address and supply equipment for the entire East Coast market of offshore wind development. Another report from the Southeastern Wind Coalition estimates that developing a 2.8 gigawatt offshore wind farm could bring up to $4.6 billion in net profit to the state's economy. There's at least two areas off the North Carolina coast that could one day have an offshore wind farm. One area is off Kitty Hawk and the other off Wilmington. Let's start with Kitty Hawk. This project is much further along than Wilmington. The company that will build this wind farm is Avangrid Renewables. Avangrid already owns and operates an onshore wind farm near Elizabeth City. Power from there goes to Amazon. Last year, Avangrid submitted its construction and operations plan to BOEM, the U.S. Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. It includes huge financial benefits, but almost all of it is for Virginia, not North Carolina. Collins says that North Carolina should still see some benefits from this project.
The economic development benefits don't stop at the state line for Hampton Roads. It's very close to North Carolina. A lot of folks live in North Carolina and work in Hampton Roads. Again, it's not that Virginia is the only state that would see the economic benefits, even if it is considered a Virginia project.
Collins also points out that it's not official that Avangrid will sell the power to PJM. PJM is a regional electric power system that services several states, including Virginia and a small part of northeastern North Carolina.
There is no contract yet, and I think this is one of the biggest misconceptions, and this is something that Avangrid has to balance very carefully. Is they have to message, are we a Virginia project, are we a North Carolina project, or are we both? In the end, they need a buyer. The buyer is going to be the state in either case, most likely. The buyer would either be the state of Virginia or the state of North Carolina. But there has not been any purchase of any of that electricity.
In other words, there's still a chance Avangrid could sell power to North Carolina. But if the current plans continue and Avangrid does sell its power to Virginia and PJM, some North Carolinians will still get the power, the residents who are serviced by PJM in that northeastern part of the state. Carrie Allen with the North Carolina Coastal Federation says that regardless of where the power goes, it's the renewable energy part that really matters.
While we don't know where that energy will end up, the fact is that wherever it does, it will offset carbon emissions, which helps our coast. I think it's our kind of responsibility as citizens and good neighbors to generate that energy and hopefully see it within our state or at least our region.
It's important to point out that as of right now, Avangrid is only planning to develop 40% of the land that it has the lease to. The company decided to develop the area in pieces. So there's also still the potential for North Carolina to receive more power and more jobs whenever Avangrid starts to develop the rest of its leased area. Collins says state officials need to start planning and investing even more if they really want North Carolina to see those benefits. She says it's going to take a coordinated approach from the General Assembly, state agencies, and the North Carolina Utilities Commission. UNC Marine Sciences Professor Harvey Syme says North Carolina has not moved aggressively enough or quickly enough to offer incentives to offshore wind developers.
I think there's other incentives in place for other renewables, like solar, but there has yet to be any specific incentive for wind. And I am confident that states to the north of us have taken those steps already. So that was likely a factor in why we weren't seeing development happen early off of North Carolina, because developers want to have that guarantee of a return, that they have a market for what they're going to build.
Despite this criticism, Jennifer Munt with the State Department of Commerce says North Carolina is right on time.
While it might on its face look like we're behind in terms of investments and attention to bringing offshore wind industry to North Carolina, that I actually think we're exactly at the right time. What we can do is look to what states to the north of us have done, New York and Virginia that you mentioned, and identify what those states have done in terms of best practices. And we can learn from what they've done, what are those best practices, and adopt them here in North Carolina without having to go through the growing pains or any of the lessons that they might have learned. And we can do it much more efficiently and effectively and more timely.
Last summer, Governor Roy Cooper signed an executive order that created a multi-agency group called NC Towers. That stands for the North Carolina Task Force on Offshore Wind Economic Resource Strategies.
That task force just met for the first time in February. We have separated the task force into four discrete subcommittees to really hone in and further study and develop solid, tangible recommendations to bring to both the governor and to the General Assembly.
That same executive order also established offshore wind development goals of 2.8 gigawatts off the North Carolina coast by 2030 and 8 gigawatts by 2040. Cooper's order says achieving these goals could power around 2.3 million homes by 2040. So I asked Munt, if some of that power is developed off the coast of North Carolina but sent to Virginia, would that still count?
It would. The executive order is written such that we meet the development of those offshore wind gigawatts by those dates. It doesn't stipulate that those electrons come on shore in North Carolina. But don't get me wrong, we would so much, very much like to see all of those offshore wind electrons coming onshore North Carolina and powering North Carolinians' homes and businesses.
And one other important thing to mention, last year, Cooper and the General Assembly passed historic bipartisan legislation that requires North Carolina to reduce its carbon emissions by 70% by 2030 and to be carbon neutral by 2050. Munt says energy from offshore wind could help achieve this.
Ostensibly, I think, you know, as part of a all of the above diversified energy resource mix, offshore wind needs and should be considered as part of that, especially with the capacity potential that it could bring. I think we'll see offshore wind coming into play in order to meet those goals.
Now for the lease area off Wilmington, called Wilmington East. That still has a long way to go. Just last week, BOEM announced that it's going to hold an auction for this lease area in May. BOEM has to give out the lease by July 1st. That's when a 10-year federal moratorium on giving out leases goes into effect. Former President Donald Trump issued this moratorium in September 2020. Whoever gets the lease will still have to go through several more years of planning. You heard from Harvey Syme earlier. He's a marine sciences professor at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Syme helped write a federal study in 2009 that looked at the feasibility of offshore wind energy in North Carolina. He still follows the subject closely. Syme says North Carolina could have an advantage in getting the power from Wilmington East brought here because of a nuclear power plant in Southport. He explained it to me like this. The power that's generated from an offshore wind farm needs to travel to land using really high voltage lines. Then, once the power reaches land, it needs to tie into even more high voltage lines to integrate into the power grid. The nuclear power plant in Southport already has those kinds of transmission lines in place. So developers could just tap into that existing infrastructure, which makes it easier and cheaper for them. Then once that power is on land, developers can sell the power. Syme says Duke Energy will likely be involved in this.
For Wilmington East, as I understand it right now, Duke Energy Carolinas surrounds the whole place. So Duke Energy is really the only utility in the landfall area who would have to agree to pick up the power. So I think Wilmington East would definitely be involving Duke.
Boehm says there are 16 eligible bidders for the lease to Wilmington East, including Avangrid and Duke Energy. In a statement, Duke Energy says they're evaluating all aspects of Boehm's final sale notice. So, just to summarize everything you've heard, because I know it's a lot. For the Kitty Hawk Project, right now it looks like most of the power and jobs will be headed to Virginia. That could change, but if it doesn't, North Carolina will still see some of those benefits. Plus, Avangrid is only developing some of the land that it has the lease to. So we could still get more power and more jobs whenever Avangrid starts to develop the rest of the area. For Wilmington, we'll have to see who gets the lease. There's a chance the power could come onshore in Southport because of existing infrastructure that could be easy to use. Duke Energy could also be a part of that. The company says they're continuing to evaluate the potential for offshore wind in the Carolinas. Like I said in the very beginning of this episode, the potential and the desire to establish North Carolina as a major player in the industry of offshore wind energy is here. But in order for North Carolina to see all of the money and jobs and power that could come with that status, state officials need to make the proper investments and offer the right incentives as quickly as possible. State officials say they're working on it. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Celeste Gracia. Thanks for listening.